So I had to do a cleaning house of my idols and my thinking, and it had to start with me. That the Lord had to work in me to work on how I was going to love Guy. Because regardless of whatever Guy did or didn't do, even if he was sinning, it did not mean that I had to sin. And so I had to start being humble and saying, okay, Lord, trying to fix him isn't working. You've got to start fixing me.
Well, today we're all about marriage, and Amber Leah joins us on Focus on the Family along with her husband, Guy, to help you learn how to de-escalate and have a more peaceful relationship with your spouse. Your host is Focus President and author Jim Daly, and I'm John Fuller.
John, it's pretty normal for marriages to experience the ebb and flow of relationship. You have those beautiful days, those wonderful moments, and then you have the maybe not so wonderful moments like, do I have to tell you again where the milk is?
Or I'm so sorry.
Or worse, yeah. But the irritating things, right? Here's some encouragement from the book of Hebrews. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Maybe not you or your spouse, but Jesus is, and that's something to stand on. No matter what things look like with your spouse today, rest in the fact that we have an unchanging God who is willing to comfort you and help you and transform your marriage. Today, we're going to bravely trudge into some areas that might be a little uncomfortable, the triggers in your marriage. Every marriage has them, and all of us need God's help to get through those things and kind of mature so those triggers don't trigger us, right? Mm-hmm. And I've asked Jean, my wonderful wife and accountability partner, to be here with us today.
I think it's wonderful that we have Jean along with us. And Guy and Amber Leah are relationship coaches and co-owners of a faith and family production company in Los Angeles. And they've been married 14 years and have four boys. And they've written a book together called Marriage Triggers, Exchanging Spouses' Angry Reactions for Gentle Biblical Responses.
Welcome, each and every one of you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So glad to be here.
Now, I'm really looking forward to this. I think it's one of the core communication issues in marriage. How do we not trigger each other? How do we better understand those triggers? And we're going to get into that. Guy and Amber, you came up with the idea, so let's start with you. You describe your marriage as triggered from the start. That sounds a little frightening. Why was that the case? And didn't you enjoy a little bit of a honeymoon period?
Well,
who's going to put their hand
emphasis
up?
Emphasis on the word little. We had a little bit of a honeymoon period, but not very long.
Things moved very, very quickly for us when we got married, and within a couple of months we got pregnant, and so we didn't have that time to kind of develop ourselves and get to know our identity as a young married couple. We quickly shifted directly into parenting, and, you know, the extra room that was going to be the fun room suddenly turned into the baby's room. And, you know, all that my wife is a wonderful planner. And so she shifted into high gear planning mode and painting and all the things. Oh, yes. And I'm like, wait a minute. Like,
what about me? He was saying.
So it is evidence of your growth, the fact that you just said, she's a wonderful planner. It sounded so heartfelt.
Yeah. No,
did it used to be like, man, she plans everything?
It still is. I'll admit that can still be a thing.
Because best foot forward.
Those are one of the differences we have in our relationship, is she very much is the planner, and she thinks 10 steps ahead, and I'm very happy thinking one or two steps ahead and being in the moment. And so we have to continually find that balance for ourselves.
So I get the baby part, but before that even, there were other stressors going on for the newlyweds listening that may be going, oh, my goodness, that's my wife or that's my husband. What were some of those other stressors?
Well, you know, they say opposites attract, and there is some truth to that, but it also creates a lot of everyday practical problems. And when you're in a friendship and dating, and then you get married, living with one another is a different beast.
Really?
And, you know, it was even early on just with, for example, we would, I wanted to put in our new apartment a wall of portraits, you know, our wedding photo, and, you know, make room for when baby comes and all of that, and the planner and me.
The big wall of pictures.
The big wall of pictures. And I thought, on a Saturday, this is going to be amazing. We will all lay it all out. We'll do all the measuring. Guy will do all the hammering. And he he woke up ready to watch the football game, you know, and he was like, whoa, wait a minute here.
It was the Notre Dame USC football game, and that's what I had planned. I had planned for weeks for that day.
I know, that's right.
How could you plan that during the SC Notre Dame game?
We just had different perspectives. perspectives on what was important at the time. And because we didn't at the time have the communication skills to work through those things together, which we want to offer people hope that that is possible, at the time we weren't doing that. We were just triggered and easily provoked to anger. And so we were reacting instead of responding to each other. And it kind of went downhill from there.
Did either of those things happen then? Did the wall get the pictures or did the game get watched? Yes.
The wall got done, and the game got watched part of it. But neither of us
were very happy about either place at the end.
It ended up in the book, so it still exists as one of those days that was a pivotal day for us.
Yeah. Well, and you both became convinced that you'd married the wrong person.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell us about that.
That's a big statement.
Yeah. Yeah. I married Mr. Wrong for sure. Mm-hmm. And he married Ms. All Wrong. we got it all wrong. And I used to think, well, I believe in God's sovereignty, but boy, this was a mistake. I mean, I really felt that way early on. Even though I loved him, and a lot of the time I liked him, we had so many triggers that I wondered, how is this going to happen? How are we going to navigate this for the rest of our lives? And it wasn't until God started working on me personally, after I nagged and argued and yelled for a really long time, and that didn't work, the Lord eventually started to say, Amber, you are Ms. All Wrong, and he's Mr. Wrong, but that's because nobody is perfect. There is no perfect person except for Jesus Christ. And so as long as you continue to be prideful and argue, you are not going to live life to the full or have the marriage that I designed. Because the minute that you say I do, you do become a match made in heaven. And so that's what I had to come to. It was like, you know what? We made a vow. God did bring us together. He is wrong. I'm wrong. But that's because we're two people that are sinful. We need to yield to being perfected in Christ day by day. And that's what's going to make us right for each other.
You know, Amber, as you describe that, one of the things that certainly Gene and I have encountered, I think you and Dina, John, have probably encountered this too. It's hard to, if I could say it this way, get your fingers out of your ears. Because I think we get into the habit in our marital relationships where the more pain you're causing me, the more trigger you're causing me, the harder I stuff my fingers into my ears because I don't want to hear it. And it is the exact opposite of what the Lord wants from you, right?
Yeah, the pain acts as blinders, you know. It filters us to not being able to hear or see each other.
Yeah, and that is a fork in the road in your relationship. You got to decide if that's where you want to live in that constant conflict.
Amber came up with this wonderful principle that I think is one of the pivotal things in our book and in our marriage. Is the development of a me-first attitude. And at first thought, that sounds like prideful, me-first, I want to get what I want. It's actually the flip of that. It's the, if I want my wife to be more loving, then I need to start with me, and I need to be more loving. If I want her to be more understanding and compassionate about my needs, I need to show her that compassion and the understanding of her needs first. Be first, and it changes everything.
Well, that's a good foundation. I mean, obviously. Yeah. Let's go to some of the triggers in the book, because I want to hit those.
Yeah.
And you're going to come back next time, because we're going to keep this discussion going. And Gene wants to tell the world about all of my, you know.
It'll be a separate web extra.
She's got quite a list over there.
I see the list going to the floor there. But one of the things, Amber, you identified with, and Gene said, yeah, that's one for me too, is when the house is a mess.
Yes.
That's a trigger.
It is.
How is that a trigger? I mean, are Guy and I triggering this and you and Gene? Or
you know, it's a combination of things. And it you know, every marriage is unique, right? Because you've got two unique personalities, and that's going to make up a unique marriage personality. But for a lot of couples, we found that one or the other is more bothered by clutter or dirtiness, you know, which are two different things. Sometimes the house is very clean. Wives will tell their husbands when they, you know, are come in after being gone from work or whatever, and we'll say the house is clean, it's just cluttered. It's messy. But those are two different things. I'm trying really hard here. But so for Guy and I, you know, he's not as bothered or triggered by clutter as I am. And when you're home a lot, like I was with our kids when they were young, a lot of couples will tell us this is such a problem. And so I had to disrupt that habit of being reacting, being quick to anger. And, you know, I believed God when he said, be slow to anger, you know, be quick to listen. And I had to say, okay, deep breath. What can we do together to tackle this? You know, put some things in place, communicate. Part of it was just me practically having to get some better storage bins for the mess, teaching the kids to take on a little bit more responsibility. But if that's your biggest trigger, You know, don't get overwhelmed by the 10 triggers that you have, but take one at a time. And we would do that. We're like, look, the constant quoter is not working for me. What can we do to strategize together? I don't want to keep reacting. I want to be more proactive.
If I could say from my side of things, you know, I was working a really intense job where I'd be at work 10, 12 hours a day, and I'd come home, and Amber's got, you know, two or three or four kids at home. At this time, it was three kids, two of them still in diapers. And I'd come home and could barely open the door because there's, like, toys all over the floor, you know, and I'm walking into that going like, I just got off work and I should come into a house that's clean and ready and, you know, and I'd be frustrated or I wouldn't say anything.
Yeah, that
and
was
I would,
not a good
and
stage.
I would allow, I would allow that trigger to kind of bubble up in me and it would immediately push me towards frustration and anger right away. But until I gained a full understanding of what her day was like with those kids in the house by herself without a lot of friends at all in our, this new neighborhood that we had moved into, until I had a better understanding of what her days were like, I was triggered very quickly. And so once we had a better understanding of that, it allowed me to be more understanding of walking into that knowing.
So I went through a job loss, and while that wasn't a good thing in the end, God used it for good because he was home more, and he got to see how difficult it was, and that made things better for
us. Let me ask, Guy, for those spouses who can't walk in those shoes then, who do have that stressful job, and are stressed out. Well, I can ask Jim as well.
No, I'd say ask God.
Stressed out by the clutter and the chaos. What advice do you have for them?
I want to say that it's a really simple one, but I just think that you have to have an understanding of what your spouse, what their day is like and what they're going through. And again, it goes back to that me first attitude a little bit. When you are concentrated on yourself, thinking about what your attitude is going into something, I think you can get a better understanding of what you're walking into with your spouse.
And he would do that. Also, he would call me on the way home from work. He got in the habit of doing that just to kind of get a lay of the land, a feel for the environment he was walking into so he could prepare himself mentally to walk into that.
Yeah.
That was one thing we did.
I'd take a moment either in traffic or right out in front of the house while in the car, just, how's it going? What am I walking into?
What do you need
just
help
so
with?
So I know.
When I would call
home if Dina said, what do you want? I knew that I was walking into something.
Exactly.
Sounds more like military communication.
We got four zombies in the right there. Look out when you come in the door.
Yes, yes.
I mean, that's
prepare
crazy.
Yourself for the landmine.
Okay, well, that was very good of the ladies on this house being clean thing. Now, let's go to a guy one. Guy.
Yeah.
When it comes to us being triggered, maybe backseat driving. I mean, I'm terrible at that.
Yeah.
Right, Gene? I'll confess it.
Me too.
I can be a backseat driver.
Absolutely. But she didn't hesitate much there. No, but we've worked through that.
Good. I'm glad. Yeah. That one's off the... Okay, let's move on to the next trigger.
Yeah, we can talk about it.
There was early in your marriage, you had a driving experience, I think, with the two of you. What happened? And we'll respond.
Yeah, we were... So we live in Los Angeles, and it is just crazy. It is fill every hole. It's traffic for hours. It's just nuts. And on this particular evening, we were driving back. It had rained a little bit, and I was changing lanes, and someone in front of me just changed right in front of me and caused me to have to, you know, jerk the wheel to get out of the way. And Amber immediately was like, Guy, what are you doing? You shouldn't drive like that. And it was this immediate lash out at me. And I'm like, it wasn't me. It was him. And I'm trying to be defensive and take care of this.
Yeah, let me ask you this question. If you didn't swerve, would you have been hit?
Oh, absolutely.
Probably.
Okay,
clearly
I'm on your side on this one, guys.
I am now.
However.
I wasn't hit, but I am now.
Yes.
The principle is, and we didn't necessarily work it out that night as successfully, but
and
a little while
nice
later.
And guys being nice, because the truth is, this was a habit of mine. I mean, it wasn't just when we were in danger.
Yeah.
I was always telling him how to drive.
Yeah.
I admit that. Yeah.
But... what I was able to do is to think the best about my wife and realize that she wasn't lashing out at me and my bad driving. She was actually lashing out at her sense of safety for our four kids that were in the back seat most of the time. So she being the mama bear, her concern was safety for them. And so that's where her frustration was coming from. So I just had to realize that it wasn't towards me. It was literally about the situation, and it allowed me to accept her prompts and anxiety and all that in a much different way. And it really changed It still crops up from time to time. It's an organic thing. Marriage, you know, every day is different, so it still comes up
every
once in a while.
But it required a conversation. I mean, yeah, one of the things that Guy and I did is, I mean, it was so constant that we were getting frustrated in the car. We were like, look, we're going to have to drive together a lot for the next however many years. We've got to figure this out. So I was like, okay, I'm going to focus on you. You're the driver. You focus on driving. I'm the passenger. I will work on being a passenger and not a driver, and I will try to allow my anxieties to take a backseat. You know?
Yeah, but the question is, how did you control your tongue? That's what this is about,
this is
right?
A couple things. Yeah. I'd bite my tongue, literally. I'm not kidding. I would just, like, bite my tongue. You know, like, okay, Amber, zip it. But we started listening to podcasts or books on tape just to distract me.
Were these instructional driving?
Yes.
Focus on the family podcast, no doubt.
Those calming videos. Right. Just picture the blue skies.
Make a right turn.
Water trickling. But honestly, like, it seems like a small thing, you know, being a backseat driver.
I get it.
But it really, the perpetual, you know, interjections of while someone's driving, it gets to you. It just creates a layer of frustration that you may not even pick up on overtly. So now when Guy is driving, I'm in charge of the map, and not in a, hey, turkey, you were supposed to turn there, which I still do.
That was a brave move, actually.
Yeah, but, you know, and letting him take the scenic route. You know, if he doesn't go the way I would go, it's okay. Hmm. Let it go.
That's good. I can relate to this next trigger. Actually, I can relate to all the triggers, frankly.
Oh, we're signing off. Thank you for joining Focus on the Family.
But in your book, you've mentioned that you've had a struggle with an intimacy idol in your relationship because you didn't feel loved. Tell us about that.
Yes, I had very many preconceived notions and expectations about what our marriage was supposed to look like. Mm-hmm. And for us, I thought it was going to be a lot of security financially, white picket fence, Guy will go to work. I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom and work from home on occasion. And the Lord, you know, he's got all his plans for us are good, and they work together for good. But in those early years, I didn't think much of the plans that Guy was making for our family were good. And so I had this idol of, you know, closeness and intimacy, that he was going to do things my way. We were going to be on the same page. And when that didn't happen, it caused me to become really bitter. And so no matter what Guy would say or do, he couldn't get it right.
Right.
And that is a really dangerous place to be. And it's a painful place to be.
Well, and it sets up conflict, obviously. Jean, I just, you know, for people to understand your connection with this, what were you feeling? And I think it's rooted in expectations. That's
Absolutely.
What you started with.
Absolutely. That we have unrealistic expectations. And I would say, you know, maybe the greatest thing that I've learned through marriage is that your spouse cannot read your mind. And I can remember being hurt that Jim couldn't read my mind. He didn't know everything that I expected. And if I had to tell him what I was expecting, that made me angry. And until I recognize that is so unfair. Only Jesus, only God can read our minds.
And I am not God.
Right.
I know that
every
day.
It's okay, and you should sit down with your spouse and during a season and say, okay, this is really what my expectations are for my birthday or for when you come home for work, or these are my expectations for when I come home from work, and how can we get
there? The birthday one's funny. You should bring that up, because there was one birthday where Jean said to me, I just, you know, I'm not sure you can tell us all the motivation behind this, but said, you know, I really don't want anything for my birthday. I'm good this year, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Very crisp, bright attitude. I thought, oh, wow, take some
selfless.
Pressure. So birthday comes, and, you know, we have dinner, and the next day I could tell she's not happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what's the matter? You didn't even get me a card for my birthday.
Yeah.
I thought you said, what I heard was you didn't want
different than you said, apparently.
I mean, anything is like a gift. It's a card. It's anything.
Right.
But that wasn't quite it.
No, and I still remember where we were when I said it.
Wow.
And what
have I
meant
ever said
was,
I'm sorry? What I meant. I'm
yes,
sorry.
Yes, you have. What I meant was I didn't want Jim to buy me a gift.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't want Jim and the boys. But that didn't mean I didn't want homemade cards from the boys, you know, that I wanted a cake. I wanted, you know, dinner.
She wasn't fully letting you off the hook.
What she, what she didn't realize is she was actually giving the boys and I a gift.
Yeah,
a day off of birthdays. So we thought, wow, that is so kind of mom.
But how after selfless. That, I will say, I mean, truly, after that, there, I was able to say to Jim, okay, these are my expectations for my birthday.
Right.
It was, I want, can you work with the boys to make a handwritten cards?
Now, you guys had this with Christmas, right? Your
first
or second Christmas?
Yes,
you had a stocking battle?
Right. I mean, we were so excited. We were going to do stockings. You say it, guy.
Yeah, I was.
You did it.
So excited when she said she wanted to do stockings. I was really excited that that was going to be a tradition in our family, because that was something that was a tradition that my family had. The night before Christmas, we would always get together and open the stockings, and it was so much fun. But our stockings would be filled with gag gifts and little funny things and just crazy stuff. And we'd do even a white elephant thing where you'd end up sending the bad gift around. And it was so much fun. Amber's stocking, for me, was filled with cologne and movie tickets and all this wonderful, you know, oils and different fun things. And it was...
I pulled out a red feather boa, and I was pretty sure that pulling that red feather boa out of my Christmas stocking that we weren't going to make it to Christmas.
The beginning
two.
Of the end.
Because, I had been so thoughtful, all these favorite things in his stocking, valuable gifts, and I had just gag gift after gag gift, and I just thought, wow, we are really living in two different planets here. Yeah.
You know, Amber and Guy and Jean, I just, at the end here, I think it's important to really hone in on that idea of coveting the ideal marriage, having that high, high, impossible expectation, I guess, Amber, that you describe in your book. I want to, again, address that. Why is that really one of the most damaging things to a marriage?
When you have an idol in your thinking and you don't even realize it, because your spouse is not living up to your expectations, or your marriage, or your circumstances. The life that you've created is not the life that you hoped for and prayed for. You have a choice to make at some point in that moment. You can continue to be triggered and angry and bitter, and you can go down a path toward destruction, because Satan is alive and well, and he is seeking whom he may devour. And we're convinced that he was trying to devour us in those early years of our marriage. And even now, he still is on the attack. But the other option was to recognize that my desire for what I want is either going to become so obsessive that I sin if I don't have it. And that is an idol in my life, because I covet that more than putting on humility, a compassionate heart, kindness and forgiveness, and being open to trusting God with my marriage and my husband and my life. And so I had to tear down all those idols of what I wanted. And I had to start approaching Guy differently, and he had to start approaching me differently. And ultimately, we had to say, our lives are not our own. If I am so fixated on Guy's, you know, ability to make me happy or not, or my circumstances to be ideal, then I will always be miserable, because in this world I will have trouble. But Jesus says, fear not, for I have overcome the world. So I had to do a cleaning house of my idols and my thinking, and it had to start with me, that the Lord had to work in me to work on how I was going to love Guy. Because regardless of whatever Guy did or didn't do, even if he was sinning, it did not mean that I had to sin. And so I had to start being humble and saying, okay, Lord, trying to fix him isn't working. You've got to start fixing me.
You know, some convicting reminders from Amber and Guy Leah today on Focus on the Family. Well, on behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, thanks for joining us today for Focus on the Family. I'm John Fuller.
Okay, Lord, trying to fix him isn't working. We've got to start fixing me. I love that statement by Amber at the end. And I would say that a lot of marriage counseling tries to get at that realization, to focus on what you can change in yourself that will impact your marriage. And our goal here at Focus is to make sure that your marriage is doing as well as it can do, especially as Christians. We need to be committed to the Lord in our marriages. People are watching, and they want to see, is it really something different? Do they really love each other the way they're supposed to? And I think it's a wonderful challenge. It's not something to shrink back from. It's a good thing. Let's show the world what Jesus does in our marriages, because they are that different from those that don't know the Lord. And I'd love for you to get a copy of the book Marriage Triggers by Amber and Guy Lear, and be challenged to let this book renew your commitment to responding gently and biblically towards your partner. You'll find that on our website at safamily.co.za. And if you need to talk to someone, do get in touch, and please let us know how we can help you. Our number is 031-716-3300, or stop by our website. Well, we're right at the end of SA Marriage Week, but you can still catch up and access the content there that's designed to help you celebrate and look after your marriage. This year's theme is Marriage Without Masks. You'll find a link to get to the SA Marriage Week page from our website. I hope that you can join us tomorrow for the conclusion of our program. For Focus on the Family Africa, I'm Graham Schnell, inviting you back then when we'll once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.